from the 757. This is DJ CJ. Stand
up. Hey everyone, welcome to the Foach's Corner with Coach Phony Bennett, Dougie Fresh, and tonight in for TW is Grant Kersey. Phony, welcome. What's happening in the Twitter world?
Sports are actually happening. We got baseball going. We got NBA starting for real tonight. Plans for college football. So this is it's starting to get a little more interesting because we have sports to talk about, not just sports adjacent topics.
Real live sports. I mean, there was MMA, there's boxing or whatever, but this is actual sports that a lot of people will watch now.
Yeah, and credit to the NBA, man. Their bubble thing, their testing came out yesterday that zero positive cases. I mean, they're doing this right. And I guess somebody told me hockey's doing the same kind of thing. So that's really good. I'm not sure that the other sports will be able to have that same level of success. Baseball's already having problems with the Marlins, with 17 guys testing positive and stuff. But props to the NBA for pulling this off.
Well, as you said, NBA starting tonight. Pelicans and the Jazz. Everybody will get their first look at Zion, or since the bubble, right? And then another big game, the Clippers and Lakers.
Huge games. I'm excited for both.
Really good games.
Yeah. Huge games. Yeah, I'll tune in just for Zion, man. He's one of those guys, and he proves that people don't just hate all Duke players, because I don't know anyone that hates Zion. I mean, the guy is so much fun to watch.
He's such a likable dude, man.
He is. He's a nice guy. He's a nice kid, right? And I still go back, and I've said it before, when you watched him in college, if there are two guys walking towards each other at a timeout, and the bigger guy usually just, like, keeps going, right? And he's like, I control what happens here because I'm the dominant huge guy. Zion will stop and let other guys, smaller guys, walk in front of him. It's a sign of, like, the anti-bully.
That's an interesting view.
Yeah, I never.
Maybe that's what happens when you get two Escalades and you sign your scholarship.
No, because it's happened to many other players before.
It's called the right of way.
But I know even the UVA guys have said Zion's a really nice kid. So I'm rooting.
Yeah, he just seemed great.
I'm also rooting for my man Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, who I coached as a young guy, and
that's cool.
Of course, I'm gonna take claim and teaching him how to play basketball, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, he was fun to watch in college.
It was all me.
Yeah, was it? I didn't know you coached him. That's awesome.
You have at least two NBA sons.
Players. Oh, no, three. Eric Pascal from the Warriors.
Huh. That's cool.
They were all on the same team when they were little dudes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, how many games did you win with them?
Oh, we rarely lost. And they weren't even that – I mean, they were all okay at the end. I mean, they were – somewhat skilled, but they weren't they weren't the most dominant players at that age.
Never know.
But again, it's all in the coaching, right? I'm kidding.
It's all in the coaching. I'm kidding.
We were solid. We won a lot of games.
Do you see a lot of guys who, like you say, they weren't the most dominant players, and the guys that were the dominant players that don't then end up amounting to much?
Absolutely. And I talk to parents often, several times a week, about their kids and the kids. They talk about the rankings and how their kids are either ranked or they're not ranked and they're upset about it. I was like, it doesn't matter. The kids. So MoCan Elite is an EYBL, Nike EYBL team. They did a study. I think the study said that more than 80% of the kids who were on the team in eighth grade are not on the team their junior year of high school.
Wow. Yep. That's interesting because, age 12 to 14 is the development is so crazy, right? Like Grant Kersey might have been 4'8" in 12, when he was 12 years old, right? And Austin Castro might have been 6 feet tall, but you keep going, right? Can you identify that, Mark? Since you've done it for so long with kids,
yes.
You can usually tell who peaks at eighth grade or seventh grade or whatever.
It's funny you ask me that, Dougie, and I'm going to take this really quickly and then come back to you on that. I had a mother call me today. They just went to the doctor. She called me up. Her son's going to 10th grade. She literally called me in tears saying my son's not going to make the NBA because the doctor only told him he's only going to be 5'10", maybe 5'11". I'm not telling you. I was like, what?
I'm not laughing at her.
Call me? Crying because your kids, and I said, so what's the goal? And she said, well, of course he wants to play in the NBA. And I'm going, I've trained the kid before. I've worked with the kid. Like, he's so far from the NBA.
Gee, that's
goals. Like, the goal, lottery is playing college basketball on any level. Division
Lotto.
1, 2, 3. Dougie, Grant and Dougie, where you guys got is, like, it just doesn't happen.
And she's already looking beyond that.
The chances of you playing at UVA in a school, a top school like that, a top 20 school, top 10, top 5, is just unheard of. It just doesn't happen. And parents just think, I guess they go on and they watch TV and they watch the NBA and they watch college, and they just think, oh, my kid will make it, no big deal. When he's ready, whenever he's ready, he'll get there. Like, what?
No, that's why
so important. Here's
a training.
It's like, whatever amount of money NBA players make, they are 0.0001% of the world.
I think you need another zero in there.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there's how many teams? 12 guys, 15, whatever the number. It's so minuscule, dude.
Yeah, it's
unbelievable.
My father was a PGA teaching pro. You know, he taught golf, and he used to say, he's like, you know, I am the top 10th of a percent of all golfers to be, you know, a teaching pro. He's like, the guys you see on TV are the top 10th of 1% of guys like me, you know, the distance and people just don't get that. Both my daughters are in gymnastics, and I sit there and I listen to these parents, and it's amazing. Right here in Virginia Beach, this class of 30 gymnasts, you listen to the parents, they're all going to be Olympic stars. And they talk about it in those terms, and they pressure the kids in those terms. And it just, man, yeah, I don't know how you find balance as a parent, trying to guide them. You want them to be successful, but most of them are not going to be.
Well, that's when you get kids burning out as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, you do. You do.
Did you have a lot of pressure on you, Grant?
Yeah, a ton of pressure. No, I'm kidding. No, I didn't have any pressure at all.
It's all on your
own. Going back on the height thing, my sophomore year of high school, I was 5'6".
That's why I said you were 4'8 when you were 12.
5'6".
Grant, when did you start dunking?
The summer before my junior year. So I grew. My sophomore year, I grew from like 5'6 to 6'1".
How tall are you now? You're like a sneaky 6'3", no?
I wish.
How tall are you?
6'1".
Oh, so I shrunk then because you seem tall to me.
Granny, your bunnies are crazy.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from.
You're only 6'1", Grant?
Yeah, I'm only 6'1". I wish I was 6'3".
He seems taller.
Oh, no, I got to go back and look at that picture.
Yeah, you do. You do.
I want to see. So I'm taller than you? Well, that was 19, I guess, right?
Yeah, that would have been 19. Yeah. How tall are you?
I mean, my license says 6'3". I more consider it like a generous 6'2". And I've probably gotten shorter as I've gotten older.
So you got me by a little bit.
Pilates. Do Pilates.
Is that like when you're doing the yearbook or whatever? Like you try to get your stats up on your license as opposed to like on the roster saying you're 6'3"? You're like, all right, my license, I got a chance. I'm going to be
6'4". Right. Yeah. I'm looking. We got – yeah, unfortunately, we're not right next to each other because my daughter's between us. I mean, it looks like I might have you a little bit, but
– oh, that's so funny.
Maybe I'm not standing up straight.
Hey, guys, like now with – I know Coach and I, Coach Phony Bennett and I, are not huge NBA fans. Dougie and Grant, are you guys?
No.
Are you guys going to watch tonight?
I will watch tonight, but I'm not a huge NBA fan at all.
I'm an NBA fan. I don't follow it as much as I wish I did, but I'm an NBA fan.
I followed it back in the day. I used to be a huge Jordan and the Bulls fan, like everyone else. And, you know, that was back when I could name every player on the Bulls. But then college basketball got my full attention, and I really haven't been back to the NBA since.
I mean, I've never been a bigger fan of anything in my life than I was the Lakers when Magic Johnson got there in 1980 and then forever then. That was the biggest fan I've ever been.
I was Kobe fan day one, and that turned into Lakers fan, and now I'm forever a Lakers fan.
You weren't a Magic fan in 1980, Grant?
I was not. Maybe originally, but.
What year were you born, Grant?
97.
Oh.
Oh my goodness. Oh. Jeez. You just reminded me I have a child who's 23 years old. Thanks. Oh my goodness. What are we what do you guys think about the names of the jerseys on the backs of guys, what they're wearing in terms of in honor of social justice?
I think it's great that they're allowing them to do that, first of all, because, I mean, these leagues are notorious about, you know, protecting the shield and their brand and all that. So I think it's good. Now, the NBA had a very strict set of rules as to what you could put on, which, I mean, that makes sense. And I haven't heard a lot of controversy about what's allowed. I saw Kyle say he's got Black Lives Matter because, you know, he wanted to make sure people knew where he stood. And I love that. You know, you don't have to necessarily be a voice of a movement, but don't leave any ambiguity about where you stand. And so good for him on that. And what's Ty wearing, Mark?
Enough.
So how did that come about?
Not sure.
There you go. Right here. This is the quote that Ty said.
Grant, can you read that, please?
I chose to wear enough on the back of my jersey because systemic racism and systematic oppression have existed in this country for as long as it's existed.
Good for him. I feel like I say this almost every week, but I love how socially progressive our student athletes are and just how well they represent the university. You raised a good kid, Mark. No comment.
Really? No. In some ways, yes, right? But, you know, he also, this impacts him. This is his family, right? He's had family members that have been beaten by the police because of their skin color, marched on the front lines of the civil rights movement. His grandparents were, both of them, in the front lines of the civil rights movement. Family members that have been falsely arrested and harassed continuously for the color of their skin. So his, you know, family members who've been slaves. So it dates back for years and years and years. So I'm glad he's socially aware and conscious of it. I really am. So I'm proud of that.
That's good. How many Who's do we have playing in the NBA in the bubble right now?
Seven.
Is it like it's seven? So let's, okay. So Joe, Justin, Ty, Kyle, Malcolm, Mike Scott. And
Devin.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. I mean, I remember when, I mean, like Stith was the only guy, you know, and then I think there were a few years where maybe Corey Alexander was the only guy that who's had in the NBA.
Yeah, Brian, Corey, and Crotty were all in at the same time.
Oh, I forgot it. Yeah, Crotty was there for a lot longer than.
I think Bryant outlasted Corey because of, you know, whatever reason. And Corey's a little bit younger, but. I think Corey got eight years in, maybe, in all. I think B Nice got 10. I think Crop may have sneaked 12 in.
Wow. Yeah, he seemed to be in there for a long time. Like, I remember one time I saw him on a roster, and I'm like, John Crotty is still in the league?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure the only Corey Alexander highlight I ever saw in SportsCenter is when he airballed a free throw. Like,
no, he got a – Corey has – we'll talk about it later about dunks, but – Corey has one of the best dunks in the NBA back then off a tip jam, and I cannot find it anywhere. And it used to be on somebody's Twitter. And he kind of climbed up like a bigger guy and was like looking down in the rim and dunked it. Corey had these quick, powerful ups that he would display every now and again. It was nuts.
Huh. All right, Joe Harris. I'm sorry, Coach. Were you going to talk about something?
No, I saw Grant had the Joe Harris tweet up, so he's expected. So is Joe's going to be starting? Is that the expectation? I don't follow.
I think he does.
Yeah, he starts. Yeah, he does. It'll be really interesting though, just because, you know, KD, Kyrie didn't travel. DeAndre Jordan did not travel as well, so they brought in a couple guys.
So it'll be interesting for Joe to step up and have more weight on his shoulders, and then hopefully that opportunity there for Justin as well to bring energy off the bench.
Yeah, somebody posted – I don't know if you have it. Somebody posted a nice Justin to Joe connection from the scrimmage the other night.
That was great.
That was nice to see.
Low key, Joe Harris is becoming the man. Like he's you know, he's doing real things, man. He's a
I'm happy to admit that I was wrong about his NBA success. As much as I loved him in college and
yeah.
like I did not peg him as a guy that was going to have a successful NBA career. You know, I thought he'd be coaching in a couple of years and I mean he just keeps getting better. I mean, good for him.
Mm-hmm. He played 30 minutes the other night.
And he's more than just a shooter, man. This stuff going to the basket and banging around and stuff is he's smooth. He's
it's a lot the beard. Of fun to
watch. Yeah, it is the beard. He looks like he's tanned up too in Florida.
That Justin, helps. Justin played 14 minutes the other day, and the game before that he played I think about 14. If he would have played double this time, he would have had a triple double. It's crazy stat line. He had like 5-5-5.
It was like 5-5-5. Yeah, I saw that.
That was pretty.
He's banging threes from like half court too.
Right, I saw that three that was
pulling it from deep.
Yeah. There were two of them from way out. Looks good.
Yeah.
That's my range, Grant.
That's
on
you?
On the court, in the gym, back then.
You're in range as soon as you step in the gym?
Yes, sir. Used to be.
Yeah. How about, did you guys watch the video of Kyle? Anybody see that? Somebody posted a tweet of all his shooting, talking about one of the
best. Oh, yeah.
Talking about pulling up from deep.
Oh, this is Kyle Guy's ridiculous right here. This was crazy.
Yeah. Did you see the one he caught in the corner?
Yes.
He caught it like a foot above his head, and he was facing the baseline?
And he doesn't even bring it down, and he keeps the ball high?
He shoots right away.
Everybody watch this tweet.
Dude, there's very few guys that can do what he does. So he'll catch the ball, the rim's to his left, so he's facing the passer. He can jump. Like, you're taught to, like, square up to the basket, old school. He jumps and squares his body up in the air. He did that against Auburn. It was kind of that way, right?
Right. I think we've talked about that before. I mean, his ability to take off all goofy-footed. But, you know, at the point of release, I mean, he's squared up with a good look. I mean
– Is this one?
No, they just missed it. They just showed it. Oh, yeah. Right here. Yeah, he's going again. That is one of the craziest shots I've ever seen.
He's moving right there.
He's moving to the right. He gets the pass up 3 feet above his head, and he just squares up, keeps it above his head, and launches. Yeah. And he knew it was going in.
I was going to say the same thing, Mark.
No follow-up.
Really, really, really good shooters know the second they shoot if it's going in or not. When you're really in the zone, the second you shoot it, you just know. And, like, he just brings his hands down. That's how you shot yours, Grant. You're three to make the 100.
For the 100?
You ain't hold your follow through up. You put the hands right down, buckets. You knew it was
that one felt good. I've never had a shot feel good like that before.
You knew, yeah.
That was awesome to see live. I still contend that Kyle's three against Auburn would have gone in had he not been fouled.
I agree. It was dead online.
You know, and you know, so which means that whole play pisses me off because they robbed him of a buzzer beater. No foul call. The clock expires as that goes through, and it's an even bigger play.
Imagine how crazy the place would go.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that play, I mean, those two plays, I don't understand how people are beefing about those two plays. The double dribble
and the fake
double dribble.
I
want to get a chance to interview Bruce Pearl just to ask him, and just so he can say – yes, the intention was to foul Ty,
right?
As he was bringing the ball up so that we could slow time down.
Which should be the intention, right? It makes sense.
It was the intention.
Right, yeah.
Definitely trying to,
They were totally trying. Really? I mean, and I get Auburn fans still being pissed about the missed double dribble. If the tables were turned, we would still complain about it, even though deep down we'd probably know, we were trying to foul, whatever. It's a double dribble. It didn't get called, whatever. It's the Auburn fans that bitch about the foul on Kyle. That's how I know, okay, there's no discussing this with you because that was 100% a foul that gets called 95 times out of 100. There was so much contact, and there was contact before he released the ball. There's every way you look at it, that's a foul. So if an Auburn fan argues with me about that, I'm not going to continue the discussion. You know, the double dribble, I'll let them say their piece because, you know, I'd still be salty if the tables were turned.
The way Ty he sold that play so well, like I'd be like ref, I'm sorry, I double dribbled his ball. Ty just like sold it like, yeah, I didn't do anything, he didn't see me.
I've mentioned this a few times. What he told me after the game was, I said, what happened? And he's like, Dad, I knew the guy, I knew the ref wasn't going to call it because the defense guy grabbed me.
Right. Amazing. That's knowing the game.
That's knowing the game. That's a tenth sense.
I mean, I know my reaction when that play happened, I was just kind of like, huh. And it was like, it looked odd to me. I wasn't thinking double dribble. Something didn't seem right. And I mean, the announcers didn't notice that there was a double dribble. And
weird too, because it hit his back foot. It hit his heel. Yeah. Right, I hit the ball and it came back, and then he just picked it up. All right, let's keep playing.
Yeah,
awesome.
Coach, did you get into any Twitter wars, or did you get in a little bit of a beef with any Auburn fans?
No, on Reddit I did. I posted a couple times on Reddit, and then for a while, anytime I'd post in basketball, like I would just get downvoted. And I know it's just salty Auburn fans. Like it didn't matter what I was saying, but I mean, on Twitter, people don't really beef with me too much on Twitter, and I'm not sure why. Not that I want them to, but I think they, I mean, most people probably understand the futility of arguing with a fake coach on the internet, and there's so many better things you could do with your time.
Don't underestimate people knowing there's so many things better things you can do with their time. Do not underestimate.
But it's weird how few arguments I get in on with folks on Twitter, especially depending on what proof the bourbon I'm drinking is, I might get a little bit, say some things during a game. I've posted about Kentucky before and received like the mildest replies from Kentucky fans and Big Blue Nation. I mean, those people, they don't mess around. They defend their brand to the death. So
they're absolutely brainwashed. I grew up there. It's brainwashed fans. I mean, I love it. I love Kentucky and I love the people and I love the team and everything else, but the fans, it's brainwashed. It's like Brazilian soccer. No, it is. It's just like when you're in Georgetown, Kentucky, 10 minutes away from Lexington, and they're playing the first game against Methodist University, everyone's home watching the game. Nothing's going on. Amazing.
You got a Carson Edwards.
Yeah, did you guys see this play?
No. I'm so happy that I can cheer for Carson Edwards. Like, if that Purdue game had ended differently, like, shots of him would just be utter pain for me. But I loved his game against us. I mean, not while I was watching it, in hindsight only, but I'm happy that I can be a Carson Edwards fan.
This is the clip where he drove past Russell Westbrook and then dunked on James Harden.
Damn, lefty.
Yeah, and he's, like, literally 5'9".
Right.
Is he really?
No.
Yeah. The most humble, nicest kid you'll ever meet. He should have been a UVA player.
I don't know. He seemed like such a good guy. That moment between he and Momedy.
Him and Momedy.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
That was awesome.
I mean, think about it. You want to kill each other at that point of the game, and they just like smile like, yo, let's go.
Did that just happen?
Wow.
Right.
Yo, Grant, when that was when Carson was just absolutely torching you guys, are you guys on the bench like, yo, what's going on here? Are you guys like paying respect among yourselves?
So I was front row right behind the bench with one of the other managers.
Right.
And that's exactly what we were. We were just like, what is going on?
Right.
Because it was as soon as we hit one, they were already down the court and he shot and made it already. Because we're used to 30-second possessions and he's shooting as soon as he crosses half court.
What was that saying?
You're giving him props though, right? I'm saying? That's my point.
For sure.
Yeah.
You're just in like disbelief and shock. Like he's really hitting all these. Like I remember the one when he came off a ball screen on the logo and just pulled up.
Yeah. Did you go into the locker room at halftime?
No, I was not back there. But yeah, mom, when he started hitting all that and we're throwing everybody at him. Yeah. Everybody's trying to guard him and he's shooting threes over Dre, contested, making it like it's nothing.
That banked in three, man. I thought that was it.
Yeah, I did too. Usually when that happens, when you make a shot like that, I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah, but I was like, okay, if he's gonna make that, that's just how it's gonna be.
I'm gonna tell you something though. Sometimes this happens in games, Mark. Tell me if you think I'm right. Once we got to overtime by a miracle, I get it. the whole thing. I was like, I think the chances are that Carson is shot out. Meaning, you know, when you go off like that, it doesn't last. I mean, like, it did last for him, for the record. But he missed a couple of shots toward the end, right? That he was just without thinking, making early. So,
well, I think we had the momentum going into overtime, and I felt so. If I can remember this correctly, but I could be remembering incorrectly because I was like in another world when the shot went in. When Mamadi's shot went in,
right?
Like I lost it, and so. But I had the feeling that I was remembering being confident.
Yeah.
Well, you got to figure Purdue, I mean, just probably had an adrenaline dump right at the end of regulation. Like, they're amped up thinking, hey, we're Final Four bound, this is it. And to have it ripped away, that's tough to recover. I mean, not just mentally, but physically, when your adrenaline does that, it's got to be tough to get your arms and legs back and really you know, perform at the same level again.
Sure. Man, I remember all those kind of games, not that I was ever in that type of game, but like, say, Sweet 16. I'm like, man, can we just win by 30, like, and just get this over with? Like, I just – you know what I'm saying? I just want to just drill this team and go next. High school, state championship, whatever. But you got to battle. It's fun.
Grant, what was the most intense game for you?
It seemed like each game topped the last one. I would say the most intense. It's probably the national championship, just because that's like the final game.
Yeah.
But then I don't know. Like, I heard when Kyle got fouled, I heard the whistle. So I knew it was foul shots, and I could see the ref right away. So my feeling didn't change. I wasn't like really like, oh man, we lost. I never had that feeling because I heard the whistle.
Oh, so God.
If I wouldn't have heard the whistle and then I've been thinking the game was over, that would have changed a lot.
I wish you would have told me, because you would have saved me. Oh, you would have saved
my. I knew we lost.
My moment.
I knew we lost.
I don't even remember if I realized it was a foul. Obviously, I was watching on TV, and I don't even remember my reaction. I was probably in such a stupor at that point. Like, all I know is the owner of the company texted me after that game. Cause what, that was a, what night was that? Was that a Sunday night game?
Saturday.
Okay. That was a Saturday. There was one of those games that was played where there was going to be a weekday afterwards. And the owner of the company texted me and said, you know, you'll probably want to come in late tomorrow. I'm sure you're
that's awesome.
Going to be feeling a little bit rough. You know, and it was just, I was hoping, I was like, make two of them, please. Make two of three, Kyle. I still can't believe he made three. I don't know how you have the intestinal fortitude and the stones to sink three free throws there, especially with the timeout, trying to ice them and all that.
So I thought he'd make them. I thought he was going to make them. I'll tell you what, I've told you guys before, I was in the 17th row behind the bench, and I'm sitting there, I see it. I'm the same as you, Mark. I'm like, we just lost. You know, worst part is I have to go home tomorrow. I can't stay here until Tuesday. And that's what I'm thinking selfishly. And the dude next to me, David Cox, great soccer player, Virginia, 2 or 3-time national champ. He's sitting next to me. He grabs my arm. He goes, he got fouled. I go, what are you talking about, bro? He's like, I saw it. He didn't hear it. He saw it. He knew he got fouled from our seats.
Wow.
He's way more in tune than I was, for sure.
I will always say this about Kyle. I'm sorry, Dougie. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm usually the most chilled out guy at our games. Win, lose, I'm with my boys. Who cares? I could not watch the free throws. I couldn't look. But I knew he was going to make them, but I couldn't even look.
I'm glad you knew. I wish you were sitting next to me. I was sitting right behind Joe. Big Joe, I called Joe Guy. Yeah. Well, he was actually sitting behind me, whatever it was. Right. And I was just like smacking him, punching him.
Oh my God.
I say this all the time. It's like the year before, Kyle admits or comes out and says he suffers from anxiety.
Yeah.
And 365 days later, or a little bit more, or, you know, whatever it was, 380 days later, here he is at the free throw line and has to knock down three free throws. That is incredible.
I knew. Let's throw it to a team member, Grant.
Yeah.
Did you think no chance? I mean, definitely he's going to drill them all, or?
Oh yeah, 3 for 3.
3 for 3, right?
I knew it.
Seriously.
I knew he was locked in. No, I'm being serious. When they went to review it and the whole team huddled up, and Kyle didn't get in the huddle, he just did his own thing. He did his own thing right behind it. I said, "Oh, he's locked in." I was like, "Nobody needs to talk to him. I mean, he's good. He knows everything. He knows the situation, the setting." When I saw that, I'm like, "Oh yeah, he's making all three of these."
Was there somebody he had to kind of shoo away there? I seem to remember like.
Yeah. Some people would try to go like, "Okay, you got this guy," and
he just walked out. He wasn't there.
Yeah, you don't need to hear
that. If I would have seen that, I would have gone to court. Oh. Why would you do that?
You never talk to the shooter. You never do. Right.
It's the pitcher throwing the no-hitter or the perfect game. You don't talk to him.
Talk to him.
Leave him alone and let him do his thing.
Did you happen to see when he got fouled or right before – or when he got fouled and Auburn thought they won?
Yes.
Earl, he was right next to Tony Bennett, extending his hand, say good game.
The handshake, yep.
And Tony Bennett, like, sticks his hand out halfway and goes, wait a minute. Raises the other hand up.
You're damn right it was a good game, Bruce. I don't know how we ended up talking about the national championship run, but I'm glad we did.
We always do, right?
It just dawned on me because I just moved. I had that entire season and all the tournament games on DVR, and I had to turn that thing back in, and so I've lost all of that now. So,
all right, going from basketball to college football?
Yep.
Let's do it.
ACC just released their plan moving forward. But it's interesting because including Notre Dame, I've heard a lot of mixed feelings about it.
If the season happens, I saw a bunch of UVA people, fans, saying that we have a very, very, very tough football schedule.
The road games.
Our home schedule looks nice, but our road schedule looks impossible. It's all either teams that are good like Clemson or teams that used to be good like Florida State and Virginia Tech. So
it's going to be interesting what happens with fans, though.
Right. If there's no fans, I don't see how they're going to allow fans. And that's my whole thing about this whole season. To me, it's still hypothetical until we actually play. I don't yet see how they're going to be able to do it safely and to protect the athletes, to protect the coaches, the officials, the TV people, all of that. You know, the NBA situation is working because of the bubble. With football,
I think it's going to be really telling what happens with the MLB because they're trying to have a season and they're not in the bubble.
And so like the Marlins, okay, they're not going to play for a week or two because they had all these players test positive. Yep. In football, are they just going to be able to do that? Say, we're just going to postpone these games and now we're going to be playing those games later? I just worry that you know, after, you know, week two, some team's going to come up with 12 players tested positive on Sunday morning. Yep. Now their opponents are going to be testing positive a few days later, and a few days after that, they announce the end of the football season.
Isn't practice supposed to start next week?
Is it? I'm not sure. I know they've started some workouts. It might be official practice.
So I was on the phone with a college coach, women's college basketball coach, Anthony Oliver's wife. I don't know if I told you. I think I told Dougie. Told you this. And she's hopefully recruiting this girl that I know and from New York. And she was talking about, I think she coached at UAB at one point. And she talked about the economic impact of University of Alabama football. And I believe the number she said, I'm almost positive, she said the Alabama football program, the economic impact of it is $850 million. To that area.
I mean, that's insane.
So if that happens, everybody's going to want Alabama football in that area to be played.
Right. And that's the problem is you don't want these decisions being driven by money yet. Ultimately, yeah, that's what's going to happen. And I mean, I know a lot of businesses are dealing with that. You're making those hard decisions because it's, you know, does the business survive or not? And I don't see how they're going to be able to pull it off without either the virus being completely under control because people take it seriously and distance and wear masks and maybe we have to shut down again, you know, or there's a vaccine. And I mean, the clock's running out on that. I mean, when is the season supposed to start? September?
September 12th, I think, right?
September 7th, 12th. That's the first week.
Some teams are playing the 12th, I guess, and some are playing the 7th.
Yeah, that's what it made it. Yeah. That's my understanding.
No, can I get a 20-second timeout? And by the way, that might be our new rule. Everybody should get a 20-second timeout.
All right, I like it. I like it.
Three of them?
Can I
20-second timeout on your 20-second timeout? Do we all
can
get
I tell? Can I tell you how much I love Audra Smith Oliver? No, like in college, I was like, you know, Anthony was dating her, my teammate, me and AO were brothers and close. And I just absolutely, dude, I love Audra. Love her. Love her, love her. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for bringing her in the conversation.
That was the first time I talked to her. And she was so incredibly nice, so smart, so sweet.
I think you met her and Anthony with me at the ACC tournament in the Barclays the year we won, the year they tying them won.
Yeah.
We were out front and you met her. She's tall. Audra's a real 6'3".
Oh, wow. Oh,
what a great, unbelievable family. I'm about to send my my 5-year-old twins to live with Uncle Anthony. Boot camp, so. Love Audra.
Yeah, she was so incredibly nice.
That's so incredibly nice.
And you know that picture that we always show, Dougie, with you guys dressed on the staircase?
Mm-hmm.
PW always shows during the podcast to our guests. Mm-hmm. She said that is why she first went out with Anthony, because he was dressed so well.
Dude, he paid attention to it. He didn't play around. Always had like the Polo cologne, probably playing the Isley Brothers or some shit. I told you guys, Brian Smith and Anthony Oliver, they were the same year. They're always roommates. Every pregame, they're in their dorm, they're in their hotel room ironing their purple suits or whatever suits they're wearing to the game. I'm like, yo, you know they have people to do this for you? You're All-American? It's so funny, man.
That's what I always remember with my roommates who were the football players is, you know, the day before every game, they were there ironing their suits to head to the hotel, because it was even the home games, they'd stay in a hotel the night before, and they were all always there getting.
It's got to be a Southern thing, like where the moms, you know, teach you to iron your stuff, man. It's like everybody did it, except me.
All right, so in football, let's talk about this Notre Dame thing. I'm, you know, and I tweeted earlier this week that it should be, the ACC should have pressured Notre Dame, you know, join if you want to continue.
Right.
However, so the deal here is Notre Dame gets to compete for the ACC championship, which, how weird is that? They're going to potentially hang a championship banner for a league they're not members of. But the flip side is the ACC gets teams get equal share of all the Notre Dame games on NBC. So there's right. Certainly a financial incentive for the ACC, and given that ticket revenues are going to be down or non-existent, is it a good decision?
Financially, yes. In the spirit of the game, no. And we always know what we know. One's going to win out.
If there is a season, what is the financial breakdown, and how much money is there coming in without any fans?
You see, that's the thing. I just don't know how much of a team's revenue is at the box office versus television.
TV rights, right?
It's got to be 80%. TV, it's got it. The contracts are massive.
I don't know if it's 80%, because you got to remember, okay, game entry fee, admissions, right? Then you think of all the paraphernalia, the concessions.
No. All Mark, I'm very confident here. It dwarfs the amount of money.
No question. Oh, it's so much money, right?
I'm saying 80-20. It's like it's billions of dollars TV.
Yeah.
Versus a $30 ticket.
I agree with that.
Right, and so you say, okay, Notre Dame, I don't know what they're getting for each game on the NBC, but you divide that 15 ways, or I guess 16 ways now, is that how it works? Or, well, no, it'll be 15 ways. So you divide that 15 ways, is 1/15th of a Notre Dame game. How does that compare to what you net from having fans in the stands? Because obviously, if you got fans in the stands, you've also got a significant payroll with the ushers and the people running concessions and your actual inventory and stuff. So, I would be interested to see the breakdown. I mean, but once I saw that we were getting a cut of Notre Dame's NBC revenue, it's like, okay, you know, maybe it works out. But I've not seen anyone try to put pen to paper and figure out the math on that.
Right. And without fans, are the TV rights and the TV contracts the same? And also, it doesn't, going back to this about the home field advantage, how much of a home field advantage does a team have?
Right.
Without fans.
Right.
Well, I think it's still significant without fans because you're playing where you're comfortable and stuff like that. Or am I? Do you think that's wrong? I don't know.
Not I think it's as much.
Yeah. No, not nearly as much for sure.
The fans can impact the game emotionally.
But what I don't think people realize, and maybe even myself, but how thin the margins are in college sports because the expenditures are so big. Okay. Now for the NCAA, it's a windfall. They're just money, 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 pay nothing. But the schools to operate, right? Like Virginia basketball makes $28 million, spends $25 million. I'm making numbers up, but it's about that. You know, it's – and so, like Audra's telling you, when the money disappears, dude, like it's got to come from somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And the margins are tiny. The operating margins are very tiny.
They are. So let's in a little bit of a different direction, but still talking mm-hmm. about the impact of COVID.
Yep.
So UVA is going to play, and let's say a team gets tested 2 or 3 times a week.
Yes, you said right? it tonight.
Every test is going to cost probably somewhere between $2,500 to $3,500, depending on how large the team is. And if everybody gets tested and each coach gets tested, how many times can you get tested? Right? And that's going to be a huge nut of the budget.
Well, you did a great job of the night. You brought that out with Jay Willie, and he said – and Jay was like, yo, like – you know, normally when these guys are going through their seasons and it's a normal season, like, you know, what's the rap song? Money ain't a thing. They don't think about it. Now they're thinking about it. And Jason's probably like, yo, it's $2,000 a kid, 15 kids every 2 weeks. Like, so people pay attention, right?
And the smaller schools are really going to get killed because the smaller schools who get paid to go play.
Yes.
Right, all those buy games are gone.
If they get paid $100,000, if a small school gets paid, whatever, Stephen F. Austin gets paid to go play Kentucky or Duke, and they get $100,000 for that, they're not getting that this year.
No.
That's how some of those schools survive.
For sure.
Right? And during their non-conference schedule. And now their non-conference schedule is not going to bring in any revenue.
I'll be curious because you talk about the home field advantage or home court advantage if we're talking about basketball. If So there's the comfort level too, but there's also the fans' impact on the refs, and I think that's greater in basketball than it is in football. So that will be really interesting to see. You know the Cameron Crazies without the Cameron Crazies there. Do they get the same whistles? And I'm sure we get whistles. You know, when we're at home, I mean, it's got to have an impact. I know I couldn't be a good ref because, you know, I don't want 15,000 people just to hate me. Not ones that are present. If they're on the internet, I don't care. But if they're right there, like that's gonna bother me a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny you say that because a friend of mine thinks in the last 10 years or maybe forever, refs start feeling themselves in the court, right? Mm-hmm. I make a call, the crowd goes wild, and you sort of, you know what I'm saying? But that's,
I mean, TV Teddy's built a career out of it. That's his shtick. And Ted Valentine, he was around in your day. I mean, Ted Valentine's been there forever.
The referee?
Yeah.
I don't know him.
Ted Valentine was a ACC ref back, I know, in 94 or 95. I don't know what year you graduated. Yeah. He's been out there for a while. But, I mean, you got to remember Lenny Wirtz, at least, right?
Lenny Wirtz. Dick Paparo? Am I right?
Yeah. Dick Paparo, Lenny Wirtz.
He liked the crowd. Larry Rose.
Yes.
The weekend Willie was complaining about calling his tech on at UNC. Larry Rose.
I mean,
one time Walt Williams elbowed me in the head 3 times in a row and Larry Rose called a foul on me. I was like, that's awesome, dude. I get it.
But that's what you're talking about. Where was the game? I imagine the game was at Maryland.
No, at Virginia. And I'm telling you, I mean, dude, it's Walt. It's the Wizard. I'm guarding him in a box and one. I'm 6'1". He's 6'7", 6'8". And I'm like, you know, pushing him, but he like drills me, boom. Larry Rose, like, he's like, Doug, get off him. I'm like, what? Boom. Doug Smith, get off him. I'm like, boom. Foul on me. That was funny, man. I get it. It's the Wizard.
I mean, it's I mean, the fact that we all know different referees' names.
Yeah.
Brian Kersey.
Man, there was one ref back then. I wish I could remember his name.
You know that guy, right, Grant?
I'm staying out of the referee conversation.
But he's one of the good ones. I mean, and because of you, we couldn't even have him at our game.
Nah, his last year was before our game.
Oh, okay. I thought
he was a supervisor. His first year as a supervisor was my first year at school.
Gotcha.
That's because.
What do you mean? Like, why he took that job?
Yeah.
He just was, I mean, he wasn't ready to come off the court. Did the job. It was just when the opportunity was there.
Gotcha.
Probably loot.
Yeah.
But.
Probably got more loot.
Nah, I have no idea.
But I'll be right back, folks.
All right, we're going to take a quick intermission. Kick it to DJ CJ.
Professional DJ CJ.
Baseball player, as well as a DJ on Twitch. He's going to play some intermission music, and we'll be right back.
From the 757, this is
Sit
DJ
down.
CJ.
Stand up. Frank. Pass out. Frank. Wake up. Frank. Fade it. Frank. Fade it. Frank.
Been a change of plan. Rip your old plan up. Instead of hanging, helping the public stand up.
Oh. Oh. Stretch, shake, let it go. Breathe, stretch, shake, let it go. Wake these people up and show them they keep dreaming. Stretch, shake, let it go. Breathe, stretch, shake.
Some days I make thousands, some days I make millions. Spend my days chilling, cool, some sway ceilings. Everybody out there wanna know what Mace got. Way high, great drop, made by Grey Yacht. And that's just the way it be. Favor, people wanna pay for me. When I'm in Mr. Child, they wave the fee. And I don't chase money, man, money chase me. I give my wife things that she dreaming more. I give a little bit and she fiend for more. I'm back like Moses to bring the law. Brand new Saint Mason, mean the law. I had bling before you ever seen it tour. Fans of my brand to Singapore. And grown men beg me to bring them on tour. Even if they mean they got to sleep on the floor. Awake these people up and show them they keep dreaming. Stretch, shake, let it go. Breathe, stretch, shake, let it go. Wait, this is real. Hold up and show me. Keep dreaming. Stretch, shake, let it go. Breathe, stretch, shake.
From Virginia, Virginia, this is DJ CJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thank you, DJ CJ, for providing the intermission music. If you guys want to check him out more, check out his streams on Twitch. He streams every weekday. But welcome back to the show.
Yo, let me talk to that. First of all, I'm always lost on social media, so TW feeds me the stuff. I was on with DJ CJ.
Yep.
Saturday morning, from noon 30 till like 4 p.m. Poolside, he was playing reggae. The forum's set up so you can like make comments. He always sees you, hits you back. You like hits shout out.
Right. He makes it really personable. He never misses a comment. It's a good environment all the way around. And he's on pretty much every weekday, unless he's out of town or something. And then he'll do like Saturday mornings, Tuesday nights, Friday nights, but weekday afternoons.
The vibe was so good. I had to go buy 6 red stripes for the session. Yes, man.
You ever had Kalik down in the Bahamas? Like, I don't think you can get it outside of the Bahamas. But I'm telling you, Kalik beer.
No. I've
only ever had it in the Bahamas, like at the conch shacks. Like, you go down to the conch shacks and you eat this spicy conch salad and you drink Kalik beer. And I don't know, it may be total crap, but when you're sitting there, you know, on the docks eating like fresh conch, it's the best beer in the world.
Dude, it's all about the ambience. It's like where you are. So my favorite Caribbean beer is Banks beer from Barbados. And that travels. You can be anywhere and have that. It's great.
Wow.
But especially in Barbados. I get it.
I imagine anything tastes good in Barbados.
Pretty much.
You partying with Rihanna?
No, on the other side. Well, we got up now.
Bring it back from that. Bring it back from that.
Coach, any new offers? Have you extended any new offers?
You know, I got
some videos.
I recently got a very compelling resume from a member of the Canadian national team. I actually went and looked at his tape. I mean, it's decent. So I directed him to the right people. It's weird. I have been on a run lately, and I don't know if it's because of COVID or what, but rarely does a week go by that I don't get one. And obviously I'm not going to out this dude, but he is a forward, 6'9" forward, ranked 12th in the nation, on the national team. I mean, seems like a great prospect. I would have offered him, but again, I'm a fake coach and I don't have any scholarships, but I wished him luck. And he actually took it really well when I pointed out that I can't give him a scholarship because I'm fake. He actually was pretty friendly about it. So some guys just don't even respond to it. And I know, I mean, they probably feel like, oh, right, it said phony, not Tony, but this guy was cool about it. So good luck for him. I try to pay attention to these names because one of these days, one of these guys is going to end up having a lot of success in college. And I'm going to be like, see, I could have signed him to my non-existent squad.
Do you keep up with them?
No, not really. I mean, I would have to go back. I mean, there's been so many that it's really, names just kind of pass by. There was one guy that I think I've seen playing for a D1 team, you know. But a lot of these guys, I mean, I assume if they're reaching out to coaches, they're not getting noticed as it is. And so a program like Virginia or something, you know, that's not the kind of guy that they're typically, you know, recruiting. I mean, if they're good enough to play for Virginia, they're probably getting noticed on their own. They don't have to DM random guys on Facebook or on
Twitter. Like the time Michael Jordan sent a letter to UVA and they didn't respond to him. Totally makes sense.
It was a different time. There was no Twitter back then.
I tell you what, I'm on the forum and Locker Room Access, and these guys know everything. I am absolutely fascinated about the talk about recruiting. And I don't know anything about it, how it works now at all.
I try not to follow it anymore. I mean, honestly, because it breaks your heart. You're getting your emotions impacted by the decisions of 17-year-old high school students. And I know what kind of dumb shit I did when I was 17. Like, you know, as a seemingly rational adult, how am I going to let myself get let down by this? And so I try not to get too attached to any of the prospects. I mean, obviously there's guys that we're recruiting right now that I would love to see sign for us, but at the same time, like, I mean, these guys are going to do what they're going to do, and I am in no position to judge what the best decision is for them. And that's the thing, the mistake that fans make all the time. Well, that's a huge mistake. Well, how do you know it's a huge mistake? You don't know this kid. You don't know what's important to him other than little sound bites you've heard from interviews. You know, let him make his decision, and if he comes playing for us, good. You know, if Tony's extended an offer, he's probably going to fit the program. And if he decides to play for us, then he wants to be here and he's going to do well. And if not, you know, you wish him luck and move on. But
of course,
I just can't get emotionally invested in that anymore. It's there's too much heartbreak.
Well, I think Mark said it best earlier, right? When, if you reach the level where a semi-high or a high Division I college offers you a scholarship, what else do you want? Like, what's the wrong decision? Duke, Kansas, Virginia, Tennessee, there's no wrong decision. They're all great, right? College is the best.
I hate the reaction of fans when, you know, this guy that they've been saying, yeah, he's going to be a program changer for us. He's going to get us a national championship, or at this point, another national championship. And then he picks another team. And they're like, he was never going to see the floor anyway. He wasn't the right fit for the program. And it's like, come on, man. Just, you know, let these guys do their thing and make what they think are the best decisions. But, you know, when a kid makes a decision what school to play for, he's got 100 different factors he's considering that we'll never know. Right. You know, and, you know, we are in no position to judge whether that was the right decision for him. So I don't get as hung up on it as I used to. I still kind of pay attention to it with one eye, and there's guys that I'm like, yeah, that one seems like he'd be really good for us. But if he makes the decision that he's not, well, you know, best of luck to him. And
yeah, and I think what kind of, it doesn't bother me, but what I don't like about some people, fans, is they say an in-state kid should stay in state. Like, dude, the guy's got an op. He's lived in Tennessee for 20 years, you know, 18 years. He has a chance to go to California.
Right.
How can you hate him for going to UCLA or USC for having that opportunity, right? I don't know.
Right. And meanwhile, Tony's getting guys from New Zealand.
Like, right.
Should New Zealand kids stay in New Zealand? Hey, whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All I know is when tip-off happens, Tony's going to have five guys on the floor that want to play for Virginia. And, you know, they're probably going to be pretty good at it. So,
man, I gave up questioning Tony Bennett a long time ago, and I tried. It doesn't work.
Right. Well, I think Kie was probably, hopefully for a lot of these folks, was the last one that they said,
including me.
You know, right? So many people thought he was the, the consolation prize. You know, we didn't get who we wanted. And then, you know, suddenly he is helping lead us to a championship. So
can we dream and imagine that Kie Clark goes on to a 10-year NBA career just for fun?
I mean,
would that be unbelievable?
Well, I mean, you know, Tony played with Muggsy. You know, he's no stranger to small guys who can ball. And, you know, that's a possibility. And certainly in today's NBA, I mean, the bigs aren't the same focus that they used to be. So it's always a possibility. And that dude's got a lot of heart. So
a lot of fun, man.
I'm certainly not going to say it's not possible. All right, so what are we looking at right now, Grant?
Speaking of college basketball, the NCAA just came out and said they're going to allow uniform patches for social causes.
Have they said anything about, like, what patches, or are they going to put the rules in place like the NBA? I mean, they've got to put rules in place. I mean, you can't just claim any social cause, right?
That's what I'm not sure. I would assume it would be something similar to the NBA, how they give guys a list of what they can choose from. But I have not seen that yet.
Which, and I mean, how is that freedom of speech? Here's your freedom of speech. You can say these 10 things. I saw somebody on Twitter today said if he were a college player, he'd put his Cash App or Venmo name on the back of his jersey. I think it's good that they want to do this, but because, hey, this is, you know, the NCAA, it's still a brand. Your college is still a brand. They still have to limit what players put on, and it's still going to create controversy. Well, I want to put this and I can't, or, you know, what about this cause? You know, can we put Save the Whales on there? Do people even still give a shit about the whales? Like, that's the stuff. Even if you're allowing that, you're still going to get into areas where folks are going to be unhappy. I'm glad they're doing it. I think it's a step in the right direction. But it's not going to be without controversy.
It's going to be really interesting how it plays out. I think it is a step in the right direction as well. Hopefully it plays out in the right way, and they do it in the right way. So it'll be interesting what they say from that. But I think talking about college basketball, that brings us to probably what we can wrap up the show with, and our discussion about the toughest player in UVA history.
Wow, there's –
there's some big names on this list.
Yeah, and there's so many good choices on this list. I mean, you know, you kind of have – so you have Jack Salt, who, like, I mean, nobody ever hurt Jack Salt. Like, he was big and strong, and I mean, he damn near killed guys by standing still. Then, you know, on the flip side, you got, like, Harold Dean. Now, I watched Harold Dean up close, and that dude, he was not – that big. I mean, he was, you know, muscular for his frame size, but that was a tough dude. And Virginia back then, and you know, if Dougie comes back, I mean, he can tell Virginia back then. I mean, they played really physical basketball, and Harold Dean was a tough dude. And then you got Kie. I mean, that dude's what is he, 5'2"? 5'3". I don't know what he is. He gets smaller every year. As his legend grows, he gets smaller. You know?
I mean, you got to think about, yeah, he breaks his wrist, has surgery, and doesn't in the middle of the season and doesn't miss a game.
I forgot about that. I mean, that – and, man, there are so many great
– And going back to what you were saying about Jack Salt, I might be a little biased just because he's the guys I played with, but I remember the game when Jack set the screen. I believe it was NC State. There was a timeout after that, and Jack is walking back to the huddle, and he has blood on his jersey from where the guy's head hit him. And he's got to get it cleaned off during the timeout.
Don't worry, it's not mine.
I'll tell you what, you're talking about Harold Dean. I've never seen a dude come in as an unheralded freshman like he was, and he battled. And he was and is a tough motherfucker.
I remember he was so
I was very
scrappy.
Close to saying it was him. It wasn't even – it was – But that, I mean, come on, that's the right word. And you did not ding our esteemed guests here, our esteemed the guy that owns this show, Phony Bennett, for his shit earlier. So I can say it.
I didn't hear that, but here's another one for you for repeating it.
Hey, I can't say shit now.
You can say whatever you want. It's your show. But I'll tell you what. Let me know if any of those guys, and they're all way tougher than me, for the record. Did they ever play 6 days after an appendicitis? That's what I want to know.
There's only one answer for me.
But
yep.
Ooh, wait,
Kentucky Fresh.
And by the way, if I read that article, I had 7 points in 8 minutes. I was on pace for a 40 point game, for the record.
6 days after you had your appendix removed. So I got to ask, were you the one that started that trend of UVA players with appendicitis?
I'm a trendsetter by definition, yes.
Because, I mean, since then we had Justin. Who else? Somebody else had their appendix.
London had
London. It. Yeah.
And I was texting Jay, Coach Jay Willie. I'm like, Jay, these dudes are taking 2 weeks off. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Hey, can we talk about Drummond for a minute, though? Al Drummond, he was the first, you know, black player at Virginia ever in basketball. There were, I think the year before, there were four or five football players who were African-American. So I've got to give this guy the mentally tough thing because back then, I mean,
That could not have been easy. I mean, the things I felt about certainly the alumni fan base, when I was a student, and that was in the 90s, I mean, Al Drummond was playing that. He had to meet a lot of resistance from the folks that are supposed to be cheering for him. So,
And maybe they embraced him. I don't know. But in the back of his mind, so him mentally tough and his I've read a couple articles about him, and his teammates, older guys, just gush about him. He was so fast, and he was – I think he was – was he a lawyer? I'm not sure. He was something, you know – had a good life and passed away semi-recently. But think about that, what that mental toughness takes to be able to be that guy, you know?
I mean, that's one of the reasons Jackie Robinson was the guy to break the MLB barrier, right? Because they thought he had the mental fortitude to do that. That's a really good point, Fresh.
And we also can't go – thank you. We can't go through every guy, but there are some tough, tough, tough guys on that list.
Yeah, but I just know. I mean, I'm with you on the Harold. Watching him, I would watch what he would take, and that dude. I mean, he was just a scrapper. There's so many guys on there.
I mean, I voted for Brian Stith because I saw the guy break his ankle in the first half against Pittsburgh and Richmond. And Ethan Saliba did his Mr. Miyagi trick on him in the locker room, and he dominated the second half, effectively on a broken ankle, and never missed a beat. So that's toughness to me, man.
It's a tough – it's tough to name one.
It is tough.
It is very tough.
I'll tell you what, I once rolled my ankle at Slaughter or at the Dell. Real bad. I was driving down court. guy turns around as I'm driving the paint and sticks his foot out. Like he didn't know I was going to be right there, rolled my ankle. And the bus wasn't running all the way to Faulkner. So they dropped me off at U-Haul. I had to walk on a bum ankle all the way back to Faulkner. I'm not saying I'm the toughest GBA student ever, but you know,
you're trying to get in the conversation. I guess.
Yeah. So your picture should be in here is basically what you're saying.
Just saying if you had another row of guys there, maybe
you're on the bubble. Yeah. You last four in, first four out, just missed the cut.
And by the way, if you ever lived at Faulkner, you're walking uphill both ways to class. So,
oh yeah,
in the snow occasionally. So. Oh man!
All right, is that all our tweets for tonight, Grant?
Yeah, that covers everything.
Awesome. Well, man, I'm just happy we got to talk actual sports tonight. This was fun.
Yeah, it's coming.
Absolutely. Yeah, everybody, please check out Boney Bennett's tweets during the week. Vote for your toughest player in UVA history. Check out our podcasts on upcoming former Hoos. Check out our football podcast. We have – who's coming tomorrow, Dougie, on the football podcast?
We got one of the toughest guys ever, Matt Blunden.
On the football podcast?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Whoops.
Is that Terry Kirby?
Is Kirby coming tomorrow?
Yeah, I thought you were doing Terry Kirby with
yeah, I think David Dean. David Dean just dropped. I think Kirby is next up, and then Matt Blunden is a little bit into next week.
I didn't know we had Kirby. Good.
I think you're supposed to be doing that with the guys.
And by the way, let's talk about a tough guy, Terry Kirby. Oh my gosh. But it's like unfair tough, right? It's like he puts his pinky on you and you can't move, type thing. So. Dual sport athlete at UVA. Little known fact about Terry Kirby: his brother Wayne Kirby was in the Major League Baseball. A real player. I think Kirby quit playing baseball in ninth grade, Terry, and he got drafted as a sophomore in high school for Major League Baseball. Let's talk about athletes. TK, my guy,
three sport athlete. That's incredible.
He got drafted, Mark, and he didn't even play. He stopped playing. Wow.
That's incredible. Do you know what position he played?
Probably all of them, probably. No, I do not know. I don't know. He could do whatever he wanted, though. Kirby was machine.
All right, well, check out our podcast. Check out the Jay Willie Show every other Monday night. And for Phony Bennett, Dougie Fresh, Grant Kersey, and for T-Dubs, I'm Mark Jerome. We're giving you locker room access on the Phony Bennett Show. Thanks for joining us.
From the 7.7, this is the DJ Sanjay.
Stand up, Frank. Pass out, Frank. Wake up, Frank. Fade it, Frank. Fade it, Frank.
I think I'm born to win. Me broke, that's an oxymoron. Forget a bus, I bought a drop guitar on. G4 is what I saw on. You thinking I ain't hot, you're so wrong. Sorry for the prolonged, but now life goes on. Long list of hits and it goes on. I wake up and I don't even feel like a star. And man, I'm getting a million a bar. Right. Indeed, I need not take no lie. Uh-huh. Man, y'all gonna make me cry. It's kinda eerie when you hear me. Yeah. Your head stand up. Uh-huh. Been a change of plan, rip your old plan right. Up. Instead of hating, you have to lift the big stand up. Oh. Oh. People love and show them they keep dreaming. Yeah. Stretch, shake, let it go. Breathe, stretch, shake, let it go. Wake these people up and show them they keep dreaming. Stretch, shake, let it go. Breathe, stretch,
DJ. Some days I make thousands, some days I make millions. Spend my days chilling, coots and suede ceilings. Everybody out there wanna know what Mace got. Way high, great drop, made by Grey Yacht. And that's just the way it be. Favor, people wanna pay for me. When I'm in Mr. Child, they wave the fee. And I don't chase money, man, money chase me. I give my wife things that she dreaming more. I give a little bit and she fiend for more. I'm back like Moses to bring the law. Brand new Saint Mason, mean below. I had bling before you ever seen it tall. Fans of my brand to Singapore. And grown men beg me to bring them on tour. Even if they mean they got to sleep on the floor. Away these people up the shoulder. Keep dreaming. Stretch, shake, let it go. Breathe, stretch, shake, let it go. Away these people up the shoulder. Keep dreaming. Stretch, shake, let it go. Breathe, stretch, shake.
From Virginia, Virginia, this is DJ CJ.